You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Detective Comics number 981, Justice League No Justice number 3, The Flash number 47, The Terrifics number 4, Supergirl season 3 episode 19, The Fanatical, and Flash season 4 episode 23, We Are the Flash. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News, Krypton has been renewed for Season 2. I still haven't checked that out yet.
I haven't either. I've seen really good things about it, though, so I'm definitely going to try and see if I have a way to watch it or not. I honestly don't even know, because I know I don't get sci-fi as a channel, but maybe it's on Hulu or something. I don't know. I'll have to look and find out. But the positive stuff I've heard about definitely has made me want to check it out.
Yeah, I've heard it's more of a sci-fi show than it is a superhero show or anything like that. So I've heard it's, because I've heard good things about it too. I heard it's, you know, it has tie-ins to Superman, but it's mostly its own sci-fi show with some political stuff and things in it. So I'm interested in checking it out. And now that we have even less shows going on, I'll probably start watching it soon. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Supergirl's casting a transgender character for season 4. I guess this news originates from a casting notice for a character called Nia Null, and she's described as a transgender woman in her early 20s. And according to the casting call, this character is supposed to be a confident political speech writer. So it's like a new hire to CatCo. So. Which will be interesting, because on Supergirl this season, we have not had a lot of stuff going on at CatCo.
No. It's basically that'd be kind of cool to get a little more back in the newsroom.
Yeah. So, because we've been hardly at it in the newsroom at all.
Yeah. And I will say, in regards to this news, I think it's cool. I also am not surprised that it's Supergirl. That was the show that's doing it.
It makes the most sense where it would fit in, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's just like, if you told me that one of the shows was casting a transgender character, I'd be like, oh, it's Supergirl, right? So, yeah. I'm most excited for what the character could bring to the show, honestly, in regards to a little bit more with CatCo. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, because CatCo has been lacking, and I think we've kind of seen more Supergirl than Kara this season, I think, anyways.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. It would be nice to see James running CatCo a little more. They've done it a little bit this year, but it's still like, we know that technically he's in charge. We don't ever regularly actually see him doing it. Like, he must be good at his job because they're not having problems, so we rarely actually see him do that.
Right. And we'll be talking about it later this episode, but we actually got to see him doing a little bit of running CatCo this week. And there's a really cool scene I want to talk about later. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, DC Superhero Girls is an all-new animated action comedy featuring fresh character designs and storytelling from the award-winning producer Lauren Faust. So it's supposed to be coming to Cartoon Network soon.
That's cool, and they also they changed up the art style just a little bit. I thought it looked good, and I'm excited for it. My little sister was super into the show and also the series, the comic series that they made. So, yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's awesome that they're sticking with it and putting more stuff out for it.
Yeah, I am too, because, you know, that's future readers into the older stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, we see a lot of stuff at the bookstore for the DC Superhero Girls. I always look at that stuff. I'm like, yeah, more DC stuff.
what I think DC needs to do, though, the important thing to do, so DC Superhero Girls is awesome, but what they need to make sure is that they then have the titles there to sort of pass the baton to. I don't know how many of those that they have right now. I still think that they're a very male-dominated lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Not to say that there aren't. There definitely are female-led titles, but like, if you have something great and successful like DC Superhero Girls, you don't want to drop the ball and not have like the next step. Like you nailed the first step. Make sure that the second step still is there to take.
Right. And the good thing is they still have the comic series going on too. So, you know, people who watch the series, they have the comic book they can pick up too, which is cool. And then we know we have some of the books and stuff at the bookstore, so that's good. Mm-hmm. And of course, I've seen the dolls and action figures and stuff, so.
Yeah.
All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Batwoman and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, are ending in August. So, not surprised by either one of these. I knew Venditti's run was ending with 50. I didn't know they were ending the series.
I wonder if they're just sort of relaunching Green Lanterns.
Yeah, I bet you they are. And I bet you they'll relaunch it under a different title.
I did like the idea of having two separate ones. I really liked what they did. I didn't always like the stories, especially in Hal Jordan, but I liked the fact that one was more cosmic focused. And not that Green Lanterns wasn't, but it was more just like normal beat stuff instead of fate of the universe constantly.
Yeah. I like the separation too, because the Green Lantern's focused on Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz, and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. While it focused on Hal, it focused on the whole Corps too. So, I really like that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to say about Green Lanterns is I like how it tied into Hal Jordan sometimes, where they'd come together with the Corps. So.
Yeah.
And Batwoman, I wasn't really surprised it was ending. It was a title I collected from issue one with Rebirth, but it just wasn't as good as it could have been, I thought.
Yeah. And it's one of those. It's a character that like it needs to be. It really needs to be very good in order for it to get the sales numbers that they're gonna want.
Yeah.
It just can't. It's much like with Superwoman. It can't be a mediocre title because then people just aren't going to read it. The character herself is not a strong enough draw for most people. That if it's just an okay title, it's just not going to get the numbers.
Batwoman's got some. They got some good stories they could tell with her. They just weren't.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it was the same thing with Superwoman too. Like there was stuff there that they could do, and they just, like you said, they just weren't doing that.
Yeah. All right, and for our next bit of news, Joel Jones released her new Catwoman design, and I thought it looked pretty good. I'm very excited about this Catwoman solo title, just because, you know, she's getting married to Bruce, and there's going to be a new dynamic we haven't seen before. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, me too, and I'm very excited for just the fact that Joel Jones is getting a series to work on. She's been great on Batman. And I've mentioned it before, but her Lady Killer series is really good. If you enjoy Joel Jones's artwork, I really recommend checking out that series to get a feel for what her storytelling is like. And I think it's a perfect fit for Catwoman. I have high expectations for the series. I think it's going to be really good.
I'm looking forward to it. All right, in other DC news, former Batman editor Scott Peterson and Batman artist Kelly Jones are reuniting for a new miniseries launching in August called Batman King of Fear, Kings of Fear, which, of course, is going to star Scarecrow.
Naturally.
So I'm excited about it because I know Kelly Jones, you kind of have a taste for his artwork because he likes to exaggerate things, like make Batman's ears like really long and stuff like that. But it was something I got used to when I was younger because I read the Nightfall series that I remember him being on was a big event. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, the DC's miniseries, for the most part, have been pretty good. I mean, the worst thing you can say about a couple of them is that they were forgettable, but none of them have really been bad, I don't think.
Right.
Maybe that Odyssey one wasn't great, but...
We always use that as an example, don't we?
But I don't even remember... But see, even that one, I don't remember being terrible. It just was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
It was just kind of boring.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, for the most part, most of their miniseries has been good, so I'm looking forward to it. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, we're going to talk about a 12-issue maxi series launching for the Super Sons. I was like, yes! So we're going to be getting Adventures of the Super Sons, written by Peter Tomasi, with art from Carlo I don't know how you pronounce his last name, Barberi. Basically, the team that's working on Super Sons now.
That's awesome. I'm so excited. And I think the great thing with the maxi series, too, is it lets a writer really be focused on just telling, like, one story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they don't have to be laying the groundwork that you usually have to lay for an ongoing. You really get to just tell the story. So, yeah, I'm super excited. I'm excited that we're getting more of it, too, because it's just such a good dynamic. It would be a shame to lose it.
Yeah. On a sad note, Super Sons series is set to end with issue number 16, which we'll be talking about next week. So that's sad, but I'm happy that they're coming back with back in August with their 12-issue maxi series.
That being said, to be honest, if the maxi series does well, and I certainly hope it does, I almost think it'd be a series that would be well suited to just in different installments. Especially for the reader base that it's going for, because those are way easier to package as books. If you just sort of like Super Sons and the Adventure of LexCorp or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, if you package it like that, I think there's a lot of potential there.
From what I was reading, the Super Sons maxi series is supposed to be them dealing with aliens, actually. They're aliens that are... The premises behind this maxi series is aliens come to Earth because they identify with the with villains. Their heroes are the villains. So they're, we have different aliens portraying villains, I guess. So that, I think that's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
I'm excited. All right. Well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted no transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up. Which one of those chest buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here. Right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For
Let's talk Detective Comics number 981. All right, Cletus, the truth will set you free. And that's basically what happens in this issue is Stephanie takes control of Tim's computer system and shows him the truth of what really happened in the future. We learn that Amanda Waller is the president of the United States, and of course she ordered Batwoman to basically kill Batman. And what we actually find out what's going on. I mean, we'd seen the version before, but when we find out what the whole version is, Batwoman confronts Batman, or Kate confronts Bruce, and they talk about what is going on, and we find out Bruce is dying from radiation poisoning that there's no cure for. Bruce says, you know, he could run, or no, I think it was Batwoman that said, you know, we could go on playing a game of cat and mouse where you keep getting away. And Bruce is just like, no, I don't want to do that. I've programmed Brother Eye to wipe all my computer files, take out all my equipment and all that stuff. So it was Bruce's choice to die, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing that, I don't know what the surprise or confuse is the right word for me, was how much that they really emphasized that becoming this sort of Batman Brother Eye hybrid was really Tim's choice. Like this whole time it was to me at least, it was unclear how much was Tim letting go of control and how much was sort of Brother Eye just sort of taking over. And this one seemed to really emphasize that it was really Tim, like, willing to go over the edge. And I was like, why? Why do we insist on doing this?
See, and that's my whole problem the whole time. That is not Tim's character. I'm sorry, but you guys don't get Tim's character because that's not what he do. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So, like I've said a gazillion times already, I'm glad the story is ending.
It felt like it ended very, very cleanly, very, very fast.
Yep.
Like things went downhill hard with Tim's turn into Brother Eye, and then all of a sudden, like, it wrapped up fast. Like, it's instantly everything's fine, which isn't necessarily bad. Like, I get he really went for, like, an ending. Like, this is the end of my run. I was going to end every single storyline.
And he did.
Yeah, he did. And then we got one of the biggest surprises with this was the Clayface is back. And it was like, wait, you know, you can't just pull that out with no other, like, just, oh, yeah, by the way, Clayface is actually still alive. But with no hints at any point.
I know. It was just out of the blue. When I was reading, I was like, whoa, Clayface is still alive. But it wasn't. They didn't give us any satisfying ending to the Clayface thing.
It felt cheap.
Yeah. He's not dead. He's with the doctor. They're leaving Gotham. I mean, he can't even confront anybody and let them know he's still alive. It felt like something Clayface wouldn't have done. You know?
To me, this is going to – I know this might sound odd to listeners, but, like, most of the endings were endings I'd be happy about, like Tim and Stephanie going off, Clayface being back, Cassandra starting to integrate herself more with the family and grow. All of those things are good things, but to me they felt hollow because it sort of felt like he was doing those things to satisfy fans and not necessarily as a logical conclusion to the story that he was telling.
I think it feels that way because it wasn't earned by the characters.
No, I mean, he spent his entire run was tearing down the Bat family, and then right at the end, everybody is happy and best pals again. And it was just like, I don't know. It's weird because, like, those are the endings that I would want, but it was just not satisfying because it just felt fake, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's being nitpicky, but it didn't work for me either way.
I think it's because it wasn't earned. It wrapped too quick because he broke them down, but he never really brought them back together until, like, it was, like, super quick. You know, even Jacob Kane didn't seem to have any issues. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I understand. I was happy that there was a happy ending, though.
Yes.
But I agree with you. Some of it didn't feel earned. I did like the fact that Cassandra was going to be helping with Leslie Tompkins. And I was excited that Barbara Gordon was going to kind of be tutoring her so she could go to high school. I'm hoping they kind of explore that. It'd be interesting to see Cassandra trying to fit in at high school.
Yeah.
Because she's definitely going to be an outcast there.
I'm curious if she's going to start popping up in Batgirl more.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Luke, I guess with Luke, they made it sound like there's some future story there with him and Brother Eye. They said that he decided to put Batwing aside for now and focus on the remains of the Brother Eye technology to make sure that nothing like that ever happened again in our timeline. But I thought that just seemed to be hinting at there was going to be something that was going to happen.
Well, you know there will. I mean, Brother Eye is too interesting of a character for DC to leave alone. It'll be back. It may not be necessarily with Luke. I mean, it probably will be, but like, it'll be back for sure.
All right. And with Azrael, it sounded like they were hinting that he was going to be doing something with Cyborg, but I wasn't sure on that. So, and then we got Kate continuing to be Batwoman with her father helping her. Until I heard the Batwoman title being canceled, I thought maybe this was going to go over into her title, but apparently not.
I do wonder if that was the intent, though.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And then, the thing you have to remember is that this story was written at least 2 or 3 months ago, at minimum, if not more than that.
Yeah, that's true. Finally, we have Tim and Stephanie, which I find interesting. I'm hoping they explore this. But Tim and Stephanie leave in search of answers to the diverging timelines. And of course, instead of going to Ivy University. So, even if it's only a miniseries, I hope they explore that. Maybe they'll explore it in the Detective Comics title, but my gut tells me they're not going to, because I already looked ahead. The next issue is Batman teaming up with Black Lightning. Now, Alfred makes a joke about a school for young vigilantes, and Bruce comments, "Not yet." So maybe they're hinting at that in the future, too.
It would not surprise me.
So I guess they're going to have... Wayne's School for Gifted Children. Yeah. Any last comments on Detective Comics?
It's over.
Yes, it is. And we're moving on to something new. All right. Well, let us move on to something new. Let's move on to Justice League No Justice number 3. Well, we find out in this issue that Brainiac's original plan was to divert the Omega Titans to Earth so that they would destroy it, and Brainiac was going to take over his own planet of Kalu. And Brainiac 2.0 was part of his plan. We find out Brainiac 2.0 was imprisoned for sharing Brainiac's gene sequence. That's the only reason why he was imprisoned. And original Brainiac's plan was to get him out and download that his original programming back in him. Basically, he was going to resurrect himself.
So I thought that plan was actually really cool. I loved the explanation of what Brainiac would have done and how unexpected his demise was. I found that to be really interesting. But what I didn't quite set right with me was how taken aback the entire Justice League was by this. Like, they were basically like, what? Batman seemed like surprised by it too. It's like, really? Like, nobody had any suspicions that Brainiac was up to something?
Yeah, I mean, they should have known Brainiac was up to something. This sounds like a plan Brainiac would have.
It was just odd. I think it was Batman that was the one that really threw me off at, like, at least from what I read, it seemed like completely unaware that Brainiac would be doing something like that. And I just thought that was uncharacteristic of him.
All right. So we have that. We have the Justice League teams who get... What I was confused was some of them were igniting their tree and some of them were trying to dim their trees.
I think they were trying to balance them. I think. So that none of them could harvest it, because basically it's whoever has the most, that one eats that planet. So I think they were trying to level them all out.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
So that none of them eat it.
Yeah, because we knew, like, the magic tree, it was it, they did, there was no magic on that world or something. They were trying to get that back. And but the technology tree or whatever, they were trying to tone back or something like that. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
The art really took me out of this one, at least the first half, because I know they switched artists about halfway through, and I thought the second one was a little bit better. But transitioning from Francis Manapul to these guys was rough, for me at least. It was pretty rough.
I didn't pay that much attention, honestly.
To me, well, I found this issue to be a little bit more confusing, and my takeaway was that it was because I wasn't following the art entirely. That could be wrong, but like when I was reading, it's like I feel like I don't fully understand what's going on because I can't totally tell what's going on.
Okay, and so I wonder sometimes if the artwork doesn't translate over to me that much because I'm reading it on my phone. It's got a much smaller screen than I would if I was holding
That's
comic
fair.
Book page.
I'm also, to be fair, I'm also looking for it. Like I will admit that I probably pay attention to more than some people would, but yeah, I don't know. For me, at least, it really took me out of this issue. The writing was still good, but the art was, at least the first half, was not great. And especially when you're transitioning from Manipul, that was hard.
I do have to say, sometimes when I get into reading comics, sometimes I'm just looking at the dialogue and not paying as much attention to the artwork. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can really study them, and sometimes I'm just like, phew, 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 you know, when I'm just trying to get through it. Right. But one thing I thought was really cool in this episode is when Starro tries to take over one of the Omega Titans. And he's like, yeah, I can take this dude. And then he gets on his face, and the dude just grabs him and just rips him in two.
He was successful long enough, though, that he was able to save a ton of people.
Yeah, they were able to evacuate the planet, or at least most of it, anyways.
I thought the only thing that didn't totally work, because this is only a 4-issue miniseries, there wasn't enough time for me to care that Starro sacrificed himself. Snyder did as good a job as you can to try and build an arc in for Starro, but there just wasn't enough time. Like, he was barely in the first issue, understandably, because he's not the main character. He's in enough of the second one where you're like, okay, this is a guy. And then the third one, he sacrifices himself. Like, I mean, okay.
Yeah, well, that's... I mean, the story's... I've liked the story because it's... You can understand it. It's good flow. And compared to Metal, oh, man.
Oh,
but
yeah.
the problem with this story is... You can't really focus on one character. I mean, he's doing a good job of balancing out
right.
the different teams, but you just can't really focus on one character that much. It just doesn't work. So
I just thought it was a shame because I honestly thought he wrote the scene really well, and I was like, man, this would have been way more effective if he had been able to build Starro up for a longer period of time.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, it wasn't like I was that emotional about Starro either, but I did think it was a cool scene.
I agree.
So what happens then is the Justice League's team fail, and Kalu gets eaten, but the heroes escape off there. Now, back over on Earth, we have Amanda Waller, whose great plan is to destroy the seed on Earth with a nuke. I don't know why blowing things up with nukes is always a good idea, but that's always that always seems to be the plan, doesn't it?
When you're Amanda Waller, it is.
And my gut tells me even if they went ahead with that plan, I bet you they would have blasted a nuke off. Everything around the sucker would be destroyed except for it. But on Earth then, we get 4 trees appear on Earth. We see one over Star Labs, over Belle Reve, the Tower of Fate, and the Fortress of Solitude. And then we see 3 of the Omega Titans at Earth. So, and next week we have one issue that's going to wrap this sucker up.
It's going quick.
Yeah, it's going very quick.
Did you see the ads for the Justice League series, the ongoing that's coming after this, though?
Yeah, I did.
They're doing the Legion of Doom. I think it's an interesting transition from having them be on the same team to immediately going. And what I also found interesting, not surprising, of course, with you have the Legion, you're going to have Lex.
Yeah.
But again, just the like complete lack of transition for Lex is so disappointing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, they just it's like a 180. It's opposite of what they're doing on Supergirl with Lena.
Exactly. That slow burn is just way more effective, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing it really good on Supergirl. We're starting to see the turn there. But with Lex, it's like a complete 180. I mean, just a few months ago, Superman and Lex are best buds. Well, not quite, but you know what I mean.
Close, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were getting along really well. And to see him do that complete 180 without any build up to it, it just feels false.
Well, and it begs the question of what was the point in the first place? Like, if you're going to do that story, what's the point if you don't have the story of him falling back?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I really don't have anything else to say about it.
Yeah. Anyway, I am excited for it. I saw the ad and I was like, oh, that's... I mean, I was already excited for it. I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about...
looking forward to it.
I'm excited about the Legion of Doom, too. I mean, I used to watch Super Friends every Saturday when I was a kid, and it was my favorite show. And the season they had with the Legion of Doom was awesome. So, of course, if you go back and watch the cartoon now, it's not as exciting as when I was a kid. But hey, all right. Well, let's move on to our next title, The Flash number 47. So now we're getting into the Flash War. The issue opens up with Iris West helping the young Wally West fix a motorcycle. And Barry and Wally return from stopping a tidal wave. And we have the Renegades, who are the rogues from the future from the 25th century, show up. They want to take Iris into custody for murdering Ichabod Thawne in the future. So we still have Wally having his memories coming back to him. Which your Commander Cold is calling temporal seizures, something they've dealt with in the future apparently. But what'd you think of this issue, Cletus?
It was all right. The thing I was most intrigued by is Zoom potentially teaming up with Wally. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So we have this part where Wally and Barry are kind of arguing about what to do, and finally Iris is like, hey, I'm an adult, I'm gonna agree to go take care of this, we don't run from things. So Iris agrees to go with the Renegades, and of course the whole Flash family decides to go with her, Barry and both Wallys. So when they go back to the future and they get to where they're going, which is the they called it the temporal court, Wally ended up not being with them. He ends up being where Hunter Zolomon is. So one of my questions was, did they go to two separate timelines, or what do you think on that, Cletus?
I don't know.
That,
I don't know.
That part was a little confusing, but I know they're going to explain it more probably in the next issue. And the other thing I was wondering, is this story going to give us Wally West's version of Flashpoint? Because it looked like the reason Hunter Zolomon got him is to save Wally West's kids. And it looked like he was going... It looks like his plan was for Wally West to like go back in time, in the original time, to save them. And this is going to end up creating a new Wally West version of Flashpoint.
I don't know. I don't know how you would do Flashpoint, though, because... there's no time, like there's no event for him to go back and prevent. You know what I mean? Like Barry goes back in time to prevent the murder of his mother, but where's Wally going to go back in time to?
I don't know.
Like the kids don't exist on this.
Yeah, that's true. I have no idea, Cletus. But I'm just telling you that's what.
Yeah, no. I see what you're saying. I don't know. I don't know how, because clearly that's their goal, is to restore the timeline where his kids exist, but I don't, how do you do that?
But you got to remember, now he's in the 25th century. So he's at a point in the future that he'd have to go back. If his kids, something happened to his kids from that point on, he's going to have to go back in time.
Yeah.
So both of them are going to so Hunter Zolomon and Wally West are going to have to go back in time from that future. So maybe that's where they get a flashpoint. Sounds like some event that they haven't told us about is what's going to they're going to be going back to.
Yeah, makes sense.
So
we'll see.
The other thing I thought was interesting in this issue was the Golden Guardian was a Yellow Lantern. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was super cool. It was very unexpected.
So I was not expecting that either. So this version of the Rogue is kind of interesting, especially the Golden Guardian. So I don't know if they're going to play, how much they're going to play into this Flash War thing, but I guess it's going to be interesting. Or it looks like it's going to be interesting to me. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, The Terrifics number 4. All right, in this issue, we get Mr. Terrific discovered a way to pass inanimate objects to Ghost Girl, even though she was still stuck in her phantom form. So we see that she gets a new uniform and a diary and some other things, you know, which I can see why she's excited about that. I mean, not being able to touch anything forever and finally being able to get a new uniform and get her a little diary to write her things down. Because basically she was the narrator of this issue. The other thing we find out about their new uniforms is Mr. Terrific designed them to help monitor their dark energy bond. He didn't say how. I don't know if it like gives off a signal if they get too far from each other or something, but
yeah, I have no idea.
But that's their new uniforms we've been seeing advertised forever.
This is a great issue. Actually, this is my favorite one so far, to be honest with you.
It was really good. So what happens in this issue is Mr. Terrific agrees to take Lena back home to see her parents on Bezetle. I don't know how I pronounce it.
Perfect pronunciation.
So what I thought was funny was he builds a spaceship, and it's basically a giant T-sphere. I found that quite hilarious. And of course, when they get out there, some junker ship tractor beams them aboard, and they have a little adventure there,
which was perfect. Like this sort of story is exactly what I was hoping the Terrifics would tell. That yes, at some point they may deal with the fate of the galaxy, but for the most part it's going to be little tiny adventures like this, like, you know, getting out of a trash compactor. Like, it was perfect. It was the perfect sort of, you know, Fantastic Four-esque adventure.
Yeah, it was. And what I liked about this, the other thing I liked about this issue was just a self-contained story. It's building these little, so far, what is this issue? Is this issue 3? No, 4. This is issue 4. So we've had 4 issues already, and most of them have been kind of self-contained with a big arcing story with them, which I think has been pretty cool.
Yeah, the first 3 I think were necessary because you kind of had to establish the team, establish the dynamic between them, their reason for being and all that. And now they've done that. So now you can just tell these stories. Now you can just kind of go out and just, you know, have them be a team. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's awesome too. And we got to explore Lena in this one. I mean, we don't really know that much about her because she's basically a new character. What was cool was when they actually got back to her house or back to her home planet, and she finds out that she was actually stuck in the Dark Matter universe for a lot longer than 10 years. 32 years, and her father had already passed away and her mother was old.
But so, she was able to make contact with the people there too.
Right, and one of the last scenes we see in the issue is her actually hugging her mother. She could actually touch her mother. So they must be able to interact with each other in their ghost phase, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this issue too.
And this was the first one that we got with Doc Shaner drawing. I know he and Ivan Reis are swapping back and forth. And I mean, the first 3 were drawn very well, and then he was just as good. And so it's been, the art has been just as good as the writing for me.
Yeah, it has been. I'm really enjoying this series, and I look forward to reading more issues.
Yeah, I really hope this is one that's able to kind of keep going, because it's just one of those perfect ones that's just a great issue by issue kind of title. Like, that's really, it's one where you can just kind of have new adventures every time.
It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's just fun.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons, and maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 3, Episode 19, The Fanatical. The rift between Lena and Supergirl grows worse. Supergirl is attempting to patch things up with Lena, but Lena's just not going to have it.
Yeah, and yeah, their relationship is definitely deteriorating.
And what's worse is Lena and Kara are really close. And it's just got Kara really torn. I know this is leading into Lena being the villain next season. I mean, if she's not the villain next season, I'd be very surprised.
I keep waiting for Kara to bite the bullet and reveal her identity. I'm very curious to see how that's handled.
If that happens, I see it happening at the end of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
While we got Supergirl and Lena growing farther apart, we have James Olsen and Lena growing even closer. And especially when it looks like James is going to have to give up his secret identity. His little backstory he talked about when he was a kid and why his fear of revealing his identity as Guardian for being a black man and having some racial backlash. This story was a very good Jimmy Olsen or James Olsen story, I thought.
It was a great James Olsen story. Honestly, it was so good. It was like, what have you guys been doing this whole season? It was great. And like the whole, like you said, the whole getting into the reason for one of the reasons he wanted to be Guardian and the way he feels being Guardian and not being judged by the color of his skin. I was like, wow, this is all really, why have you guys been sitting on this?
I know, it was really good and really gave you a good connection to James Olsen, which we haven't seen over the whole series.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing but positive things to say about the my biggest takeaway was, where has this been? This was really good.
And it makes you want to see more James Olsen too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really gave a Guardian a reason for being Guardian.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, because like I sort of got what they were doing last year, but it really kind of felt dumb. I'm not gonna lie, like it felt like we need a reason for James Olsen to be around and for him to be cool. And this one was like, okay, like I can really buy into this.
Yeah, earlier in the season when they started doing the James Olsen and Lena thing, I was like, really? But it's been working great, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it leads to an interesting dynamic. I also think it sets up for some very interesting drama, I would expect later in this season or next season.
Oh yeah, especially with the Supergirl and Lena thing, with them growing farther apart and James being stuck in the middle, that could get really interesting. Another thing I thought was really good in this episode was Alex and Ruby storyline plus John and the Marin story. I really liked how they ended up taking both of them to the arcade to try to help them out. And then Ruby, she didn't want to be there. And Marin, he had his little episode where he thought he was on... I'm guessing he thought he was on Mars under attack.
Yeah, definitely some PTSD there.
Yeah. Sure. And busted that arcade. They basically had to set them down. John had to go take care of things with the owner. Alex, she was just... didn't know what to do with Ruby. She was frustrated because she really wanted to help her and she couldn't. And when Ruby and Marin got left alone and got talking, Marin's just like, and I'm from Mars. And she's like, oh, really? Like, that wouldn't be something strange or something unbelievable.
Right.
but them start talking about foosball and playing and the game together. It was such a cool scene, I thought.
I agree. And then one tiny little detail that I appreciate, it is not important in the grand scheme of things, that I really appreciated was the fact that, so he has his episode and it causes some damage to a couple of the machines. They don't just drop that. Like, it's not an important detail or anything, but they do come back to that when they're, because then you have John going back to talk to the owner. And I was like, I'm glad that you guys like addressed the fact that you can't just walk away from destroying hundreds of dollars worth of property.
Yeah.
You know, and I know it's like, it's a dumb little detail, but I was like, oh, I like that they didn't just like drop that.
Yeah. And the other thing I liked about it is they didn't have the owner going ballistic.
Yeah.
Or calling the cops or anything. It was well handled, I thought.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I'm guessing the owner, whoever was in charge, understood what was going on, and I think they just wrote it really good, I thought.
I agree.
We've talked about a lot of the side stories going on, but let's get into the meat of this episode. And that is Tanya bringing the book, book from the Cult of Coville to James Olsen, and we're finding out that they're trying to build a new world killer. I can't remember what that little girl's name is. But I was surprised she was the villain behind this.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I thought it worked, but it was definitely surprising. I just assumed that it was going to be him.
Yeah, I did too, and I was surprised about that. And I also liked the role they gave Tanya in this. She had a pretty prominent role during this episode. Yeah. And I like the fact that she found out about James's identity and identified with him and things like that. I'm really interested if they're going to bring her in as Power Girl or if this just is a kind of Easter egg thing to the fans. What is your opinion on that?
I think it depends. I think she's definitely a character. They did enough with her character that I think they could bring her back. I don't know. I'll be very curious to find out.
Yeah, I'm very curious about this too. So, and we also found out about this Rock of Utical. Lena and Supergirl figure out they can use this rock to fix rain. But what happens is during that ceremony, that statue is drained of all of its energy. So we end the episode with Supergirl and Mon-El borrowing John's ship and heading off into space to go after the same rock that's out there on an asteroid or meteor rock or something. They're going out into space, which I think is going to be really interesting to see what happens between Supergirl and Mon-El. Because now that they're off on their own by themselves, is Mon-El going to tell her how he really feels or not? Or what's going to happen between the two?
It does feel like something's going to happen with that. I did appreciate the scene between Martian Manhunter and Mon-El where Marjane is like clearly like, dude, I know what's going on. but Mon-El, I see Mon-El definitely is not the same guy that he was last season in many ways. But like you can tell, like even he knows, like, yeah, I need to figure myself out. But I also know that this is absolutely not fair to Kara either. So like, I really like the way they're writing him, where he's not just, you know, being a completely blundering dude.
Yeah,
he's not maybe being completely smart, but he's not being completely dumb either.
Right. And sometimes things like that can go south because you're thinking with your emotions and not your head. So I'm interested to find out what's going to happen in this next episode, because my gut tells me it's going to draw them closer together. And it's going to be interesting to see how each of them handles this.
Yeah.
Because it could go a good way or it could go a bad way. All right, and the last thing I want to bring up is at the end, very end of the episode, Thomas Koval returns. And I'm kind of curious to see what he has up his sleeve next.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised by his return because we knew that he was doing something with Rain And I could have sworn we saw him at the end of the previous episode. I could have sworn that was him.
Can't remember.
When we see Tanya running away, I could have sworn he was the one that was trying to get her to come back.
Okay, I don't remember.
But that could be wrong.
Yeah, I was more... And when I saw that scene, I was more excited about, you know, Tanya being Power Girl than anything else.
Right.
All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Flash, Season 4, Episode 23. We are the Flash. And it's the season finale. I was so excited about this episode, and I was not disappointed. First thing I want to mention is when the episode starts, we have Captain Singh calling Barry and leaving him a message saying that the mayor has agreed to give him his job back. So we know Barry is going to be back in the CSI next season. So that's cool. The other thing we see at the beginning of this episode is why Singh is calling him. DeVoe's satellites are powering up. So it's basically starting off right where the last week's episode ended. And we see Central City lose power. Now, what did you think about their solution to this? Marlee's showing up and basically saying that the way to defeat the Thinker is to go into his brain.
I thought that was really cool. And we'll get into that, but I thought the way that they were able to physically defeat him was cool. The only thing that I felt was lacking, so I don't think I was as satisfied with the finale as you were, because to defeat the Thinker, you needed, like, for me at least, for it to really be satisfying, Barry needed to outsmart him. You needed to because the whole season has basically just been the Thinker just, like, thumbing his nose at the Flash and being like, hey, you're an idiot. You need to have that comeuppance. And I didn't feel like we really got that.
Yeah, but to argue that point, I mean, even though this basically wasn't Barry's idea to go in his brain, why would they were in there, they were able to outsmart the Thinker?
Did they, though? See, I don't know. What became the sort of final showdown between Flash and the Thinker was really just a fight, and I mean, it was fine. It was a little Matrix-y, which I thought was a little silly. Again, as a season finale, if I was a normal, like, episode, it was fine. That whole interaction was great, but as like the ultimate showdown between the season-long rivals, it just wasn't there for me. I guess I don't know. It felt more like a normal episode fight than a climactic fight to me. I didn't have that satisfying win. It just sort of felt like, oh, the Thinker's defeated now. I was like, oh, well, that was kind of lame.
Yeah, but I thought it was really cool. Let's get into it. So Barry goes into DeVoe's mind looking for the good DeVoe and finds Ralph instead.
That Barry, was awesome. Don't get me wrong there. Barry so excited to see Ralph back.
Barry was very surprised to find Ralph in there. And once they explained why he was still there, it made perfect sense. And it made perfect sense that Ralph needed to take control of his body again. And basically, that's what defeated DeVoe. But still, the Thinker's plan was to seize Barry. He even said it to the rest of Team Flash. His plan was to get Barry into his head. He knew it was going to happen. And he was going to basically take over Barry's powers. But Barry, working with Ralph, they were able to defeat DeVoe. Because even when they first started fighting him in his mind, DeVoe seemed to know what their move was going to be. But when Ralph's like, you gotta fight like me where you do stuff without thinking, DeVoe wasn't able to predict what they were going to do.
Which is great. Like, and again, all of that is great. But again, you have that where DeVoe even predicts that they're going to go inside his mind and he's ready for that. And that's part of his plan. And then Barry figures out that they need to get Ralph out through that portal, which DeVoe also knows. So that part doesn't surprise DeVoe. They basically are just able to do it anyway. Which, I mean, like, that worked. Clearly that worked. But for me, like, what I wanted, and I know I'm not alone in this, what I think a lot of people wanted was some sort of, like, Barry getting one over on the Thinker, and he never really did that. They just sort of won. I don't know. I mean, it's not that it's bad. It's certainly not bad. It is not like the finale to season 4 of Arrow. Because I'm not saying that, but like I was like, it was okay, and it wasn't as good as I thought it had the potential to be.
I don't know. I liked it.
I mean, because ultimately, when you think about it, what did the Thinker do? The Thinker had this legacy that we saw the previous season that all these other villains are mentioning to Barry. What did he do? What did he do that stood out so much?
Who, the Thinker himself?
Yeah. Compared to other villains that we've seen on the show, why would he stand out so much that multiple time-traveling villains will be like, oh, yeah, DeVoe.
DeVoe got...
He's pretty... not the only villain that's killed people.
No, he's not the only... He's not the only villain that to kill people. Maybe it's the fact that DeVoe became the most powerful. He came so close to defeating Barry. I mean, he outsmarted Barry the whole season. It was almost lucky that he beat him.
But yeah, but that's my point. That you just he was lucky. That's to me, that's not a satisfying ending. Like, Barry shouldn't be lucky. Barry should win. Like, he's won. Like, when he defeated Reverse Flash the first season, I felt like, I mean, yes, technically he didn't beat him. It took Eddie. But even before that, he was able to resist doing what Reverse Flash wanted, right? He had followed along with Reverse Flash's plan the whole time until he resisted going back in time. In season 2, you have the defeat of Zoom. Season 3, they finally get one over on Savitar, but this one they just sort of like, to me, I felt like they kind of lucked into it, that they sort of just like, oh hey, it's Ralph, oh what if we tried this, oh hey, that worked, neat.
Well, maybe that just proves though how much DeVoe had planned out and was smarter than Barry.
Sure.
Or
yeah,
for the whole Team Flash.
That's not satisfying, though. Like, okay, yes, the Thinker is smarter than Barry, but you just got to have that one moment, that cathartic moment. And I thought they were going to have it. When we saw that he wasn't defeated yet, I was like, okay, that wasn't the real showdown. And if that wasn't the final showdown, that'd have been fine. I'd have had zero issue with any of that. But then we just have the brief moment where he's like, oh, yeah, I'm still sort of here. And his wife rips out the piece from the chair, and that was it. I was like, what was even the point of that?
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's actually gone.
It's possible. That would be the only thing that would be a little bit satisfying about that, because there's just I will admit, maybe I'm being a little stubborn, but for me, I really like I need that moment. I need that moment where the hero like rises up over the villain.
Now, I have to tell you, when the chair powered up, I was expecting something else coming from DeVoe. One last something he was going to do. And it's possible that he's not totally gone.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. All right. I thought when Cecile got that power, we didn't know it was going to be for this ending episode. It was kind of cool that they had that planned out.
Yeah.
I thought.
Oh, no, I agree. Like I said, I mean, everything is, all the pieces are there for an extremely satisfying finale, and I thought it was pretty good. It just wasn't great. To me, I thought it had the potential to be great. I thought it had the potential to be like one of the best season finales Flash has done. And instead, for me, at least personally, it was just sort of okay, because ultimately the Thinker just kind of goes down like a chump.
All right, let's get to what I want to talk about, the mystery girl. We have her show up at Joe's house, but they're having some sort of party or gathering. Even Wally shows up. Were you surprised Wally showed up?
No, that felt like the perfect thing to do with Wally. Just be like, oh yeah, now that he's not useful in any way, here's Wally. Was the perfect usage for that show for Wally.
But we get the mystery girl showing up at the house, and she comes on in, and everybody's like, wait a minute, didn't I see you doing this or doing this and doing this? And then finally they're like, wait a minute, I recognize that jacket. And of course it ends up, and they're like, where'd you get that jacket? And she didn't say, I got it from Mom. She said, I got it from her, and points at Iris. And Iris is like, that's one of a kind jacket. I didn't give that to you. And then she reveals, I'm your daughter. Now, were you surprised when she said her name was Nora?
No, that makes sense for the show. And I also think if you name her Dawn, that you create a certain level of expectation for what her character is going to be. Whereas if you name her Nora, she can kind of be her own thing. She's not, you know, like, fans of the comics are not going to demand that she do certain things. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, I read somewhere online that Nora Allen was actually in one of the Justice League storylines we didn't cover in Rebirth. So I meant to look that up a little more, or dig in a little deeper to that, but I didn't get a chance this week. But that's what I heard. Nora Allen was from the Justice League run, one of the story arcs we didn't cover, where they were talking about, and I think I remember seeing something about the Justice League's future or something like that. I'm sure the storyline wasn't that great because that run wasn't that great, but that's where I read that that character was from. Whether she's going to be true to that character or not, I doubt it. But now, one of the other things I want to talk about is we see that scene where Barry's destroying that satellite that's falling to Earth, and we see the Mystery Fist right next to her. I've seen a couple of rumors online saying that wasn't actually Nora Allen helping him, that the suit looked different.
It's possible. That was definitely not my interpretation of that scene.
That was not my interpretation too. My interpretation was as Nora. Now,
Nora basically looks like she made her own Flashpoint is what it looks like.
Yes. That's what I wanted to bring up. Do you think that's what she, when she says she made her big mistake, do you think she made her own Flashpoint?
I think so, which I find a little interesting, because I think the implication there is that Barry would have died, but then
she came back and saved him.
But wouldn't that require, Iris must be pregnant then.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too.
Right? Like, there's no way, like, if Barry is supposed to die in that moment, Iris must already be pregnant. It's the only way that makes sense. In which case, that would also then make sense why DeVoe would be remembered, because in theory, DeVoe would have caused the death of the Flash.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense, wouldn't it? Now that
it wouldn't quite explain why Thawne hates Flash that much, because they wouldn't have had as many, that many interactions historically. But other than that, yeah.
Your thinking there, or your explanation there, brought up something to me. Some sort of Flashpoint has been created by Nora. They're going to have to go back and fix it somehow. I wonder if the Thinker's still going to be a threat, because when they go back in time, the Thinker's going to be alive.
Possibly. I don't know. I'm very excited for the next season. I thought the tease was awesome. I think it sets up a lot of potential, because there were definitely, she interacted with people very differently. Like, she did not interact with Caitlin with the same sort of warmth that she interacted with some other people.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting. One thing I'm kind of sad about is I think we didn't get much Cisco stuff this episode. And my gut tells me they're done with the relationship he had with, what's her name?
Gypsy,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's done. That, surprising, but yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's just done and she's not going to be back. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, I think so. So we should also mention Harry basically was written off the show effectively. I'm sure we'll probably see him at some point, because Tom Cavanaugh is obviously still on the show, so he can pop up at any time. But that was – I thought that was a pretty good ending for his character, to be honest.
Yeah, it was. It kind of balanced him out.
Yeah, very – like finally kind of at peace and happy.
So it's going to be interesting to see what version of Harrison Wells we're going to get next season.
I am very curious. I still.
Do you think we're gonna get the one we had from season 3 back?
No.
Nope.
I think it's either gonna be a new one, or it's gonna be Thawne. I do think Thawne's gonna come back somehow.
that would be interesting for him to come back next season, because if there's some sort of flashpoint, I could see him getting involved in it.
I don't know. And I don't know. I mean, I honestly still prefer the other guy as Thawne. He's just so good. Not to say that Tom Cavanaugh wasn't also great, but I like to have my cake and eat it too. I like to have Tom Cavanaugh on the show and then the other guy playing Reverse Flash.
I know. The other guy, I have to agree with the other guy is better than Tom Cavanaugh, but we'll take what we can get.
Yeah. I don't know. And I could be wrong. I do feel like Thawne's going to come appear somehow. I would be very surprised if he did not make an appearance next season.
You know what? I have to agree with you on that. All right. Any last thoughts?
No. I mean, what's interesting to me is that I actually really enjoyed this season. And for whatever reason, it was definitely a very hit or miss with a lot of people as far as the show goes. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the lighter tone. I thought it was back to really what makes The Flash enjoyable. I'm thrilled that Ralph is back, because that would have been unbelievably disappointing to introduce a character like that and then to kill him off that quickly. So I'm thrilled to have him back and be a part of the team. I just think he adds something great to the team. And also, again, that varying power set, I think, is something that makes Flash's team so cool. I'm very excited to see the dynamic between Barry and his future daughter, and also seeing her deal with the knowledge, like, her knowledge of the future is definitely going to impact how she interacts with people, and that'll be cool. Like, I think next season's got a lot of really interesting stuff going for it.
I agree with you. I'm very excited about next season. I'm glad Ralph is back. Just having the Barry Wally thing, they just couldn't write it well enough, I didn't think. So having Ralph on with a different power set is awesome. I realize we're going to have a second speedster on with Nora, but my gut's telling me it's going to be totally different from what we've seen in the past, just because of the fact is it's his daughter, and she's made a big boo-boo.
They're going to have to. That's the difference between her and Wally, is that they are going to have to use her. You know what I mean? They're not really going to have the option to just kind of sideline her, because she's going to be too important.
Exactly. And I'm excited to see what they're going to be doing with Tom Cavanaugh. If it's Reverse Flash, if they're bringing Reverse Flash back, I'd be very happy about that. So, especially if there's any time manipulating going on. And who knows? How do we know that Reverse Flash isn't manipulating Nora Allen, too? That would be interesting.
That would be super interesting. I know that he's not supposed to be the main villain, but I don't know, man. I just got that feeling like he's going to show up.
One of the rumors I've heard is the villain supposed to be somebody named Cicada.
Yeah, that's what I've seen too.
And it's not going to be exactly like the comic book Cicada, but it's supposed to be somebody who hates metahumans and is wanting to destroy people with metahuman powers. That's what I've heard, but you know, nothing's been confirmed yet, so they could be totally off braces. You know how everybody starts guessing everything, so
yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, when I was reading Justice League No Justice, and then I saw the kind of advertisement for the Justice League versus the Justice League versus the Legion of Doom, I was trying to think of a great story that I enjoyed with that. I probably have recommended this before, but Justice by Jim Krueger and Alex Ross is awesome. It's one of those sort of old school Silver Age-y Legion of Doom stories that's really fun. And of course, it's by Alex Ross artwork, so you know you're gonna have a good time with that. Check it out.
And his artwork of the Legion of Doom is just friggin' awesome.
It is.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm gonna shout out about ESO's Tales of the Station Volume 2. If you haven't checked out the Earth Station DCU and the Mystery of the Naked Woman yet, check it out. It's the first of a series of short stories I'm doing based off of Cletus and I's adventures from the station. I got a sequel coming out to it this summer called Earth Station DCU and Marooned on Mogo that I'm wrapping up. I'm hoping to have it out in either June or July. And so I'm very excited about that. So if you haven't read our first story yet, check that out. I'll have a link in the show notes. All right, well, if you want to comment on anything we've talked about, or leave us any sort of message, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133 and leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Next week, we'll be talking The Man of Steel number 1, Justice League No Justice number 4, the final issue, Super Sons number 16, which is the final issue of that, and Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Robin vs. Ra's al Ghul number 1. So I'm excited to start getting into the Batman wedding stuff.
If they don't actually get married, I'm going to be so mad.
They've got to, I would think.
Oh, that would be terrible. I think that would have a lot of backlash.
Why, have you seen something where they weren't? Cause...
No, I think it's just one of those things where DC resists doing permanent changes to their big characters. You know? So, I don't know. I'm not saying that I expect that. I'm just voicing now that if they do that, I will not be nice on the podcast.
And, of course, we'll be also talking Supergirl, which is the only show we got going on left. So, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Cletus, move your head.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.